Bill Bedrick is an Apache Kafka committer and the author of Event Streaming with Kafka Streams and KSQLDB. He's also the author of the Kafka Streams course on Confluent Developer. So I had him on the show today to talk about that course. Really, I tried to take him through like a whirlwind summary of that content. Like, can I compress that into 25 minutes? Let's try. So listen to me and Bill talk about Kafka Streams. Before we get there, a reminder, streaming audio is brought to you by Confluent Developer. That's developer.confluent.io. There's, of course, a video course on Kafka Streams there. There are Kafka tutorials that show you step-by-step how to write code, to do basic operations with Kafka Streams. There's a library of event-driven design patterns, all kinds of great resources for learning Kafka. When you go there, if you do any of the exercises, you'll have to sign up for Confluent Cloud. You want to use the podcast 100 code. It gives you an extra $100 of free usage. So check out Confluent Developer, developer.confluent.io. And now listen in as Bill and I talk about Kafka Streams. Hello and welcome to another episode of Streaming Audio. I'm your host, Tim Berglund, and I'm joined here in studio today by my colleague and author of Kafka Streams in Action, Bill Bedrick. Yes.
Thank you.
I paused for a second. There's several of these books. That's the one. Yes, Manning's, yeah. Kafka Streams in Action.
Yeah, and there's actually a second edition underway, Event Streaming with Kafka Streams and KSQLDB.
Nice. Okay, that sounds like a whole new book.
Yeah, it's meant to be a second edition, but I decided to pull back the lens a little bit and cover the whole streaming platform. And then, of course, I look at what I wrote back then a couple years ago and, you know, have to change it.
So you got to change it. You just have to. Yeah, this reminds me of years ago, I was taking a graduate philosophy course on metaphysics, and it was super wild class. Like, loved the experience. Easily the most difficult reading I've ever done in my life. Like, you could clock kind of 5 to 7 pages an hour.
Oh, wow.
And you'd have to go through it again. It was just like, just at the limit of my ability to comprehend. And there was a philosophy of computation book, and I can't remember the name of the professor, but it was a second edition. And in the preface, he said something like, this is the second edition of a book. I'm not sure it's the same book as the first book. And like, for a metaphysics book, that's actually really funny because, you know, like holes and parts and myriology, yeah. You know. Anyway, this is not a philosophy podcast. This is a Kafka and event streaming podcast. And you're a Kafka committer and a guy who writes about streams and works in developer relations at Confluent. So you're also the author of our course on Confluent Developer on Kafka Streams.
Yes.
And so I want to talk about that. I kind of want to go over the whole thing in like a rapid fire fashion if we can.
Sure.
Just to give people a tease. But before I do that, I know you've been on the podcast before, but maybe current listeners weren't listening then. Tell us a little bit about what you do and just you before we get
started. Sure. Well, I'll just start at the top. I've been at Confluent for over 4 years now, which is hard to believe. It's gone by really fast. Spent the first about 3-ish years as an engineer on the Kafka Streams team. And then I decided to follow. I've discovered, partly through writing the book, the first edition, that I like to teach. Mm-hmm. And I also like to, you know, I like to present in a teaching manner. You know, it's hard to describe the charge you get out of that, but
it's
a
powerful realization. If it is you, and once you see it, it changes your choices.
Yeah, and I still love to write code. I still like engineering. There's parts of engineering that I miss being an engineer full time, but I think the balance, the scales tip a little bit more to I'd like to be in developer relations that writes code versus being in engineering and does some developer relations stuff. So.
Yeah,
that's the balance. So I've been in DevX for over a year now. It's a lot of fun.
I guess that's about right. And the team that Bill's on is we call it integration architecture, but as much as these things are standardized, it might be called like developer relations engineering in other teams. So you write code for the purpose of explaining how things work.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And that's one nice thing about our team. If anyone's thinking of joining, one nice thing about our team is you've got a lot of latitude for different roles you can get into.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got this course on Confluent Developer. It's a video course on Kafka Streams. I think of the courses that we have deployed in the last few months, we're recording this at the end of September 2021, easily the most comprehensive because it's written by you, because you're a guy who likes to teach and you're kind of a world-leading expert on the subject matter. And this podcast is going to be a survey of the material in that course, not a substitute for it. It's more of a teaser. You know, my goal is, if you're listening to this and you're interested in Kafka Streams, you're going to think, wow, I should really go take that course. So, Mr. Pedrick.
Yes.
What's Kafka Streams?
Kafka Streams is the native streaming library, if you will, for Apache Kafka. And it allows you to do stream processing, event stream processing on the events you have going into a Kafka cluster. The nice thing is about it is it's an abstraction over Kafka producers and consumers. So you could do the same things with consumers and producers, but you have to handle a lot of the administrative type things, you know, when you commit and things along those lines. So it kind of frees you from that, lets you really focus on business logic and what you want to do to those records in the event stream.
There you go. That's a point I make frequently. And I there's this joke I've been making for years. I have a slide that's just a picture of Admiral Akbar. because it's a trap for you to write that kind of framework code. It can seem fun. It is fun that there's actually recreating Kafka Streams by yourself wouldn't be fun. That would be very hard. But, you know, little bits of framework things, when you encounter those problems, when you're just writing consumers and you're thinking, oh, hey, the way I'm doing windowing, I could make that a little more sophisticated. And you start down that path and you're building code that isn't delivering value to a customer or a user.
Exactly. It's like developers like to write code and that's all fun. But then you get to the point where you're kind of deviating off what the business needs are, if you will. Writing, spending lots of time. And the thing is, not to belabor the point, but I think developers lose sight of what you write, you have to support. So the more infrastructure-y thing, like you said, that's not delivering business value, you still have to support that.
It's going to need care and feeding. And
exactly.
You never can give it as much as you want because there are business stakeholders needing you to do other things. And the tempting thing about the framework is you're in charge. It's not some seemingly crazy business stakeholder who's asking for weird things that require you to do all kinds of special case things that aren't beautiful and violate your schema and, you know, the whole business software thing. And framework is just us, you know, it's just computer science. And we have to be beautiful. So it's very tempting, but you never get to give it the care and feeding it needs. It's always buggy. It's always missing features. And so using the standard thing like Kafka Streams is probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay. So Kafka Streams is this computational framework that lets you focus more on business logic and less on framework. It's an abstraction on top of consumers and producers that takes all the way the boilerplate and framework stuff you'd have to build. How does it scale?
That's one of my favorite parts about Kafka Streams. I mentioned some abstraction over producers and consumers, and I like to bring that up intentionally because the Kafka consumer has the rebalance protocol.
Yes.
Where you start up three consumers and they're part of a consumer group. Logically, it looks like one consumer to the broker. So if you, for some reason, you stop a consumer, it's going to be a rebalance and assign the topic partitions that consumer, say if consumers A, B, and C, you stop consumer C. There's going to be a rebalance and whatever topic partitions consumer C was responsible for get reassigned to A and B.
Right.
You don't have to handle that. So Kafka Streams natively has that same thing. there's only two required configurations when you have a Kafka Streams app, and that's the application ID is one of them.
Which is equivalent to the group ID, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And the Bootstrap servers, you said. I talked over you.
And you give it the application ID, and it's the same thing. So you spin up three Kafka Streams applications. Let me start in the simple case. You start with one.
Sure.
And
one application. ID is Angry Monkey or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And you want to have more processing power. You want to process more records. You spin up a second instance with that same application ID. Logically, it's one application. Now you've got two separate applications running, instances running, but logically it's one. And the same thing happens. Let's just say you're processing a topic with four partitions. That initial instance is assigned all four partitions. But now you spin up your second one. It's going to dynamically rebalance. It's going to rebalance and then dynamically allocate two of those partitions to that new instance. And you could do that up to four application instances with the same ID, and they would all end up
given that you've got four partitions.
Exactly.
But Bill, says the skeptic, regular consumers do that.
Yes, that's true. And that's leveraging, that's the beauty of it, because it's leveraging the same rebalance protocol. So it's...
Exactly. So it's Kafka built out of Kafka. And we're going to talk about stateful operations later. There's some real money that comes in here. There's some pieces we don't have on the table, but if you're thinking we just talked about how consumer groups scale, yeah, we did. But your state comes with you is the short story. And that's an amazingly good thing.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. The structure of the API. I read about a thing called a DSL and a declarative mode or the processing API. What's that all about? Tell us that.
Sure. Kafka Streams comes with it's got two APIs, and you've got the DSL, which follows the fluent pattern where you can say, you create a streams builder object. That's what starts everything else. But then you say builder.stream, and that returns a kstream object. And then you can just keep chaining different methods on top of that.
Like methods that result in a modified kstream return an instance of a kstream.
Exactly.
Like dot, 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 dot.
Typical pattern. Like, so you've got the DSL. And now I'm just going to talk about, you'd mentioned stateful before. Right now I'm just going to talk about stateless operators. So a typical pattern could be, say, builder.stream, and then you could say .filter, where you pass in a predicate. I only want to see records that match this given condition. And then you can call like a map values after that, where, okay, I want to change each key value pair that's coming through that passes the filter. I want to modify it. I want to create a new value.
Append the last name and first name to be name or something like that.
Exactly.
For some very sophisticated stream processing that would take years of research.
Exactly. But with the DSL, it's very it's the easiest way to get started, and it's very opinionated with what you can do. But you're never telling Kafka Streams how to do it. You're just saying what I want to do the record. So that's in that respect, it's the burden on the developer is very light. Burden is not the right word, but you're really just focused on what you want to do. But as with any other framework, it's never going to solve every single problem for everybody. So there's something called the processor API, which is kind of not the opposite, but you're wiring everything up with the DSL. You're just saying builder.stream, operator that returns a modified kstream instance. And like how it all gets wired up is handled for you. And then you're really just providing the little bits of logic, because under the covers, Kafka Streams has processors. But you're not providing all the code for that. You're just providing the snippet that does, like when I mentioned the predicate, you're just providing... usually it's just a lambda.
Usually, yes. You pass in a lot of lambdas.
Yeah, exactly. And you're just passing in the thing that does the evaluation. But under the covers, there's a processor, if you will, that's got a little more code to it, but that's all handled for you. So the processor API, you provide the entire processor. You know, there's an interface that you have to implement, and you provide. It's still pretty easy to do, but you're providing all the code there. But it gives you the ultimate flexibility. So you don't, if there's something, this comes into play more with stateful operators, but there's something you really want to do that's custom to your business, you can implement that. And really the processor API, you're unlimited with what you can do.
Right. With the DS, and but hey, this is, I don't think I've ever said this on air before. I need to confess something. I love Kafka Streams. That's not a confession. That's just a bona fide. Mm-hmm. I think it's an amazing.
I do too.
Solution. I agree. You've mm-hmm. dedicated some evenings to this. I've never liked the fact that we say DSL. I feel like we should say the Fluent API or something like that. It's not a DSL. It's an API with nicely named methods, you know, but I don't know. Has this come up? Am I the only one?
No, but that's great that you say that, because that's what I was struggling for before. I was thinking of the Fluent builder pattern. I didn't want to say that because it's not a builder. But Fluent API is correct. That's what you're doing. You're just kind of going along, chaining these methods. Right.
And it should not be otherwise. I mean, it's a functional stream processing API. You should use the Fluent builder pattern. It's really good. It's like super easy to read. I mean, you can write streams code that's not easy to read, but that's your fault. It's not the API. The API is pretty easy to understand. So we don't need to, it's not a DSL. Yeah. But when you're writing the builder code, the DSL, I'll just say it.
Yeah.
It's interesting that that code is creating data structures. That code executes is creating data structures inside the builder, which then get operated in these processors and inside workers and threads and all the stuff in the framework that you shouldn't necessarily need to care about. When you're doing the processor thing, that's like, okay, here's a message. You've got access to all this state storage and all this parts of the framework. You do what you want.
Yeah. And that's a good point you raised, because when you're using the Fluent API, DSL, it's under the covers, it's building a topology. It's wiring everything up, because if you have, when you create a source node and then your source node reads from a topic, it's going to consume those records or get those records in. But then you need to hand it off to another processor for it to do something. And when you're using the Fluent approach, that's handled for you. You just say builder.stream, and that sets up the source node, and let's go back to the filter, and you say .filter. Under the covers, that's establishing the parent-child relationship where the source node is the parent of the filter.
Right.
But then
modifying that first stream, you can't. You're
No.
A new one. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's the parent of the filter. So it's going to feed its records to the filter operator, filter node, if you will. But then if you do something after that, which you're going to filter records. Well, then you want to do something with the ones that pass through the filter. That becomes the parent of the next node and so on. So it builds up this topology, which is really just a directed acyclic graph, or yes. DAG.
Always a DAG in things like this.
And so these records come in and they flow through. You can have, a parent can have more than one child node. And my point in bringing that up is when you go to the processor API, you have to do those relationships. You create your processor node and declare it, as a source node. And then you give it a unique name. And then when you create your next processor, arguments you provide is you give it the parent name or names that are going to feed that processor.
Gotcha.
So you're explicitly
right. That link, yeah.
Yeah. And it's not hard, but it's more, I like to use the term boilerplate type work.
Yeah, yeah. You're doing more stuff yourself.
Yeah. But, yeah.
So we're, my attempts at being rapid fire are failing. We're going to go over, everybody. This podcast is going to go a little long, but not too long. Bill and I need to get through this stuff. And the DAG thing, it's funny. You should be able to look at the Fluent builder API and just smell a DAG. Like the DAG needs to be, it's like walking down South Broadway by all the antique shops. There's this thing that you smell. It's just, you know that it's there. And so it's that's a good point that you bring up that particular data structure. Tables. We didn't really define streams. We're talking about Kafka. There's topics, there's messages, I get it. Tables now are a part of our life. What are tables all about?
Sure. I mentioned KStream before. KStream is considered an event stream. And what that means, and I'll tie this into, you mentioned tables. I'll tie this in with tables in a second. It works, it's under the covers, it's Kafka, so everything's a key value pair. And in an event stream, records key values where the keys are the same don't relate to each other. If we have a banking app and we're looking at customer interactions, and let's just say the key is the customer name, and we see some records coming in where Tim Berglund's the key, even though we've got multiple keys with Tim Berglund as the key, they're not related to each other. They're independent events. Now we've got a K table is that's considered an update stream. And what that means, now the keys that are related to each other, the keys that are the same, are related to each other. They're considered updates to previous ones.
Got it. So like my customer ID is 24601. And so every time that shows up, that's a Tim Berglund thing. The subsequent ones are an update to the previous one.
Exactly. And banking is a great example. You go to, withdraw cash and you're bound, so that's your latest action. And then, you're going to deposit cash or whatever. It doesn't make sense what I just said, but still those subsequent thing, the subsequent action is an update to the previous one. So you really only you're only concerned about the latest one.
The latest one. So a table gives you that sort of an in-memory view of the current state of those users or whatever that object is in the stream.
Yeah. I guess maybe stock prices is a better analogy. Yeah. Where
I always use a user account. So you could put that in a database table. If you're doing this in an event-driven way, every time somebody updates, creates, deletes, you're producing a message with a serialized copy of the user object.
Yeah. And you had mentioned keeping an in-memory, it was a great segue. You mentioned, okay, we've got a table now and it's got this in-memory version, if you will, whatever. It's actually, K-tables are, that leads us into stateful. Kafka
just has it. Just going to pivot us there, so let's do it.
Yeah. And a K-table is, K-streams are stateless and they don't keep anything. Records come in, you do a filter and it comes in. Turn true, false, it's done. Right. K-table, it's stateful. And by default, Kafka Streams, there's a state store underneath the covers. And by default, it uses RocksDB as the implementation for persistent stores.
Gotcha.
Now you can, if you want to, use in-memory stores. There's
or
trade-off
there. Or you could plug in anything else you wanted if you wanted to write.
And yeah, and also with the API, there's just an interface that you have, a state store supplier, I believe. Mm-hmm. You just have to.
Somebody did that with SillaDB once. I talked to a person who had done that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Which is.
And you just have to, you just provide it and it just has to adhere to a few methods on an interface and that's it. But by default, it's a stateful. It's persistent store on local disk. And that's one of my favorite things. It's on local disk, which means that when it comes in, when it goes to look up the value, key value pairs, or it's key value stores, it's right there. There's no network hop, no going over. It's right there at local disk. And then they're backed up by what's called a changelog topic. So you never really have to worry about, you lose your Kafka stream instance, struck by lightning, boom, gone. All that data that was in that store has been persisted in what's called a changelog topic. So when you spin up an instance to replace the one you lost, it's going to replenish the state store from the changelog topic. So you're back in business. And that's
on local disk, and it's in the cluster. If you need to go to the network and bring it in off the cluster, it's persisted there and replicated and everything that things in your cluster are.
Yeah, exactly. And I had mentioned you can opt in and do in-memory stores. In-memory is going to be a little faster for you because it doesn't go to disk to read. But when you shut down an instance, even if it doesn't get struck by lightning, you just decide you need to turn it off for a little while. It's going to lose everything because it was only in memory. But when it comes back up, when you start it back up, again, the changelog topic, which is your best friend, it's going to replenish it. So even though it's in memory, you pick up right where you left off.
Tell us about timestamps. This is a tough one to do quickly, I know. What's time all about?
Okay. Back in Kafka, I think it was 0.11, timestamps were introduced to the record. So when you produce a record, if you don't part of the producer record, one of the overloaded constructors, you can give it a timestamp. If you don't, the producer puts one in for you. And that's, you know, timestamps do all kinds of wonderful things. And that allows the brokers to decide, okay, you know, you can specify how long you want records to live. And the timestamps help drive that because it's going to do that. You know, it's going to go find, this record is, you know, past the time, whatever, or the segment. I'm sorry, I'm kind of probably going into too much detail, but it finds a segment that's ready to go and we'll delete that segment. Okay. So we've talked about timestamps. Kafka Stream uses those timestamps for driving behavior with stateful applications, with windowing. Let me back this up. There's a notion of stream time, which is the highest timestamp that it's seen so far. And Kafka Streams uses those timestamps to determine which record to process next. So it's going to look at its import partition. And the one with the lowest timestamp, the topic partition with the lowest timestamp on it, is what gets picked next for processing records.
Got it.
So, so that we've got this notion of stream time I mentioned.
Which you can't really talk about without talking about Windows. So if you want to go to Windows, go to Windows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so stream time is stream time is the furthest timestamp you've seen so far.
Okay. Most recent.
Most recent
time. Most progressed in time. Yeah.
And the significant thing about that is as records come in with timestamps that are greater than that, that's what advances stream time. But if you get what's known as an out-of-order record that's earlier than stream time, it doesn't advance stream time.
Good.
That record gets processed, but it doesn't advance. So that kind of helps us pivot into windowing. Stateful operators.
Yeah.
Think of an aggregation. Count is a good one. You want to do a count of, again,
how many
going back
times
to
user 24601 updated his account in the last 5 minutes. Weird aggregation, but let's go with it.
Yeah. So you've got the records come in, you're keeping track by key, and you're going to do a count, but that's just going to keep growing over time. You know, customer 24601, you know, let's just say this person's really active all the time. That count just keeps getting bigger. So windowing gives you a way to bucket it, if you, for lack of a scientific term. And you can say, I only want to know it'll give you the count for a defined window. Mm-hmm. And there's different windows in Kafka Streams. You've got just what's called a tumbling window, which opens at a certain, you say, you know, windowed by a tumbling window of like, say, an hour. It's going to give you the count for an hour, the last hour of that customer did something.
And then the count resets at the end of that hour.
Yeah, exactly.
Those are epic aligned, right? So that's on an hour boundary.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But driven by the time, and this is where the timestamps come into play, driven by the window size is driven by the timestamps of the record. So customer 24601, super busy, but then doesn't do anything for, you know, let's say he stops working at 12, like his last record's at 12. Another record doesn't come in till 2 p.m. by our clock on the wall, that's still within that 1 hour, that's still within the window of the aggregation.
Yes.
So it's driven by the timestamp. So the windows only advance based on the timestamps of the records themselves.
Gotcha. Okay. So the record has to happen. There's no thread sitting there with a timer saying, okay, your window's closed.
Exactly. Exactly. So the timestamps of the records are what drives the behavior of the windowing. And it's,
exactly. Yeah. Vastly simpler that way. I wouldn't want to think of the timers. That sounds terrible. I'm sorry I even said that on air. Yeah. We're not going to edit it out, though. I'm just going to take responsibility for those words. Finally, last question, testing. If I want to do unit testing of a streams job, I don't want to have a Kafka cluster around because that wouldn't be a unit test and it would be overall terrible. What's my story?
Yes, that's one of the, and again, a great gem in the Kafka Streams library. There's something called the topology test driver. What that does is that allows you to write an end-to-end unit test of your Kafka Streams application, but there's no broker involved. So you provide the input records, and you specify the input records, and it'll run through your entire topology, even if you have state in there, your stateful operators, it hits those, and then you extract the output. There's methods for saying, okay, give me the output records, and then you can validate that your entire topology, you're expecting some final kind of final output.
Nice. And those final outputs come in terms of your types, your domain objects, whatever the types of the stream or table or whatever it was. So it's not like Kafka byte arrays or anything like that.
Yeah. And exactly. And it comes out with the expected types. And if you do need to do more of an integration type test, I would point people to test containers. I was pointed to that by my good friend Victor Gamov. Mm-hmm. And test containers are
long
very
time,
nice because
advocate of test containers.
Yeah.
And before it was cool.
Yeah. And it really really kind of makes, if you need to use a live broker, it makes life a lot easier for you so that you're not handling it. Integrates very well with the JUnit test framework. So
you thinking of writing any other courses?
Yes, I would love to do a course on schema registry. And part of that course would be multiple events in a topic because it's not a, I wouldn't say it's like a use case everyone needs to implement, but when you need it, there's some extra consideration you need to get of it. But there are cases where if you have records that need to be distinct objects in your domain model, if you will, but they're closely related, so you'd like to process them in the same same stream, if you will. And I find that to be a useful thing to do, but there's some things you need to know, tricks of the trade, if you will, that you need to know about doing that.
Well, I love your work, so I hope we get to do that one soon.
All right.
My guest today has been Bill Bedrick. Bill, thanks for being once again a part of Streaming Audio.
All right. Thanks for having me, Tim.
And there you have it. Thanks for listening to this episode. Now, some important details before you go. Streaming Audio is brought to you by Confluent Developer. That's developer.confluent.io, a website dedicated to helping you learn Kafka, Confluent, and everything in the broader event streaming ecosystem. We've got free video courses, a library of event-driven architecture design patterns, executable tutorials covering KSQL DB, Kafka Streams, and core Kafka APIs. There's even an index of episodes of this podcast. So if you take a course on Confluent Developer, you'll have the chance to use Confluent Cloud. When you sign up, use the code PODCAST100 to get an extra $100 of free Confluent Cloud usage. Anyway, as always, I hope this podcast was helpful to you. If you want to discuss it or ask a question, you can always reach out to me at TL Berglund on Twitter. That's TLBERGLUND. Or you can leave a comment on the YouTube video if you're watching and not just listening, or reach out in our community Slack or forum. Both are linked in the show notes. And while you're at it, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and to this podcast wherever fine podcasts are sold. And if you subscribe through Apple Podcasts, be sure to leave us a review there. That helps other people discover us, which we think is a good thing. So, thanks for your support, and we'll see you next time.